Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Garrett Wilson. Wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing. Gibson on the return. Near side. I don't see any flags. Gibson inside the 30. Hits the Jets. And he's going to go. Jets win it. Touchdown. Rookie Xavier Gibson. Game over.
Allen has time. Intercepted. Sauce Gardner's got it, Allen. Tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Lightning, 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast, number 95 for the Jets.
Listen, thank you.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1, and it's time to answer your mailbag questions. So for that, we bring in our friend who's the editor over at JetNation.com and the host of Jet Nation Radio, Mr. Glenn Naughton. Glenn, what's up, brother?
2 weeks, Scott. 2 weeks until the NFL draft. I'm fired up. I want this damn thing to get here. You know, I said a couple weeks ago I needed more time, but I'm so tired of the Brock Bowers versus offensive line arguments that I just want the damn thing to get here and over with.
I hear that. There's so many questions about the draft, and so many of them involve what the Jets should do at number 10 and the arguing over whether they should pick a quote-unquote weapon or an offensive lineman at number 10. Obviously, the trade-down, trade-up scenarios, and we'll get into all that because we've got questions about it. But let's start with Michael Pallas, who has a prospect-specific question for you, Glenn. He wants to know if you think Kieran Amagaji could step in as a rookie offensive tackle in case of injury. And obviously this goes along with the debates that have been happening as far as what the Jets should do at number 10 and number 72 and all of that. Kieran Amagaji, the offensive tackle from Yale, is a guy whose stock has risen. What do you think, Glenn? You've watched quite a bit of him and you saw him at the Senior Bowl too.
Yeah, Amagaji is a guy who, you know, the level of competition is the most concerning thing, because making the jump from college to the pros is one thing, and making the jump from the Ivy League to the pros, especially, you know, a position as physical as the O-line, it's a lot to ask of a guy. We had Emory Hunt of CBS Sports on our show last week, and I asked him about Amagaji, because the All-22 I've been able to get my hands on, I haven't seen as much of him as I would like, but from what I have seen, I mean, he looks like an extremely powerful guy. One of those, what you typically see from dominant linemen, right? Like once he gets his hands on a guy, that's it. He's taking him out of the picture. So he looks like he's got a high ceiling, very physical player. Emory Hunt, you know, the reason I asked Emory is because I've liked what I've seen of Amagaji, and I saw him tweet about him recently saying he can be a really good player, which I agree with. To say whether or not he can start from the Ivy League to the NFL day one, I think that's a little bit of a leap. But again, for somebody who is as physical as he is, I think that he's a guy you might be able to bring along quicker than some of the lesser prospects in this class. And I'm always so intrigued by the guys who aren't coming from major programs, but who show major talent. Could he be a second round pick? I've seen him mock that early. or does he fall because of the level of competition? We'll have to wait and see. But I think it would be risky for the Jets to assume he could step in and play day one.
I will say there is a history of guys from the Ivy League coming into the NFL and doing okay. There's a gentleman by the name of Foye Oluokun who was developed by Jeff Olbrich, who went on to become one of the best inside linebackers in the game. In fact, he just re-signed with the Jaguars. So you never know. I think the talent speaks for itself there. And Glenn, you had a good point. Teams may be scared off because of the competition, but in the right situation, I don't know about year one. Like you said, Glenn, it's always a bit of a leap to make that assumption with anybody, let alone somebody coming from the Ivy League. But if you draft somebody like him and develop him, he could potentially become a guy that is a long-term piece. So we'll see what happens with Amagaji. I'm curious where he goes because, like you said, you've seen people mock him in the second round, in the third round. I don't know where he's ultimately going to end up going. It'll be one of the more interesting stories on draft night, especially because of the fact that he went to the Ivy League. Next question comes in from Godson5. He asks, what would you realistically be willing to give up to move up for Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, and would you be willing to do it? I've talked about this, Glenn. I think the Jets should absolutely look into it because you never know what the price would be. Now, obviously, if there are still quarterbacks on the board that teams are trying to trade up for, the price is probably going to be a lot higher than it's going to be worth paying, so you wouldn't want to do it. But I did throw this scenario out there the other day. What if four quarterbacks go in the top six? So let's say what everybody expects happens with the top three. And in whatever order, and if somebody trades up, whatever, fine. But it ends up being Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May as your top three picks. And then somebody slides into the fourth or fifth pick to grab J.J. McCarthy. At that point, you might have Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers still sitting there on the board. What if one of those guys is still there at number seven? If, say, Brock Bowers were to go at number five to the Chargers, there has been some buzz about that. And one of those guys is still sitting there at number seven. I think at that point, you'd have to absolutely try hard to get that pick and get Nabers or Harrison, because I think the gap between him and the next option at wide receiver, Odunze, would be pretty wide. And in this scenario, of course, I'm saying Bowers would be off the board. I think the gap from Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. to Rome Odunze is larger than the gap from Rome Odunze to Adonai Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr., and Xavier Worthy. So that's why if the Jets could go up and get Nabers or Harrison and not give up the farm, I think it would absolutely be worth doing. What would I be willing to give up? I wouldn't give up next year's first, but if they could give up, say, next year's second and their third rounder or something like that, and you might not even have to give up that much going up a couple of spots if there's no quarterback involved. Maybe even just next year's second and a this year's fourth, something like that. I'd be willing to do it if it meant getting Nabers or Harrison, because I'm pretty confident that one of those two guys could step in right away and make an impact and could be a major piece for this team over the long haul as well. And that's exactly what you want. You want a guy that can come in day one and make an impact, and a guy that can be here for the long haul and be that piece that helps the offense become a formidable offense for many years to come. So that would be my answer. If one of those two guys slides a little bit and you're not looking at having to compete with a team moving up for a quarterback, then I would absolutely do it, and I'd be willing to give up a pretty hefty price, but I probably wouldn't trade next year's first rounder.
Yeah, I wouldn't move next year's first rounder, and I've said several times that I wouldn't want the Jets to move up in this class unless it was for Marvin Harrison. Now, if you want to talk about Nabers, they're not that far apart. They are both game-breaking guys with elite tools. I do think Harrison is the better all-around player. Not just the size and the speed, but the ability to bend, the wingspan, that some of the balls he's able to get to that most receivers wouldn't. A quarterback doesn't have to be perfect to make a big time throw to him. But if I were moving up, and this is probably because it's what was pitched by Daniel Jeremiah, I kind of have in my mind, and especially in a scenario you're pitching, Scott, where if he falls to seven or somewhere like that, I would give up next year's two, but I'm not giving up a whole lot more to move up three spots. They don't have a two this year. And I know that it is all about this year because of the Aaron Rodgers window, but would I move up for either of them? Yes. I'd be much quicker to do it for Harrison, but if I were to do it, it wouldn't be for more than next year's second rounder.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from JP Waxer. He asks, with the Jets having 8 draft picks and not that many available slots on the roster, do you see Joe Douglas being aggressive and moving up and taking some of those late round picks to get some players he really wants? I think that would make a lot of sense. 8 draft picks for this roster probably isn't optimal because you're not going to have 8 guys stick. So let's say there's a player that they like around the 4th round or the 5th round or something like that. Yeah, use those late comp picks to move up the board and get yourself a guy that you think could come in here and make a difference.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because I had that thought the other day and looking at, you know, what are the true real gaping holes on this roster that need to be filled? And the Jets don't have a lot. Like Joe Douglas or not, and I get the injury concerns, of course, with Smith and Moses, and I understand all that. But if you just look at the starting 22, there's not a lot of open spots on this roster. But the other part of that, too, of course, is that while the Jets have 8 picks, a lot of those are day 3, and two of them are the last 2 picks of the draft. So you're really talking UDFA territory. So they have 8 picks, but not a lot of quality picks. Would I mind trading up and then saying, listen, you know, we feel like we only have a few legitimate open spots on our roster. Let's move up and fill them with as high a quality players as we can. I'd be completely fine with that.
We move to LGVD, and he asks, Bowers worked primarily from the slot and caught the majority of his passes at the line of scrimmage. He caught few passes lined up outside and will mainly be a big slot. Is a big slot tight end who hasn't proven he can block or run routes worth more than ensuring Rodgers stays upright all year? There's a lot to unpack with this question. First of all, Bowers is a much better blocker than a lot of people give him credit for. And Brian Baldinger actually showed this the other day. So if you get a chance, go to Baldy's breakdowns. He shows this. And if you look at the tape, you'll see it. Glenn, I'll let you talk more about it because you've highlighted this quite a few times. The thing with Brock Bowers is, yes, he didn't line up as a traditional tight end the majority of the time. And most of his damage was done at or around the line of scrimmage. But that's because that's the way Georgia chose to use him. When they didn't use him that way, and there were quite a few games where that didn't happen, especially when you go back to 2022 and 2021, he was still an absolute beast. So he's shown you that he can do more than just be at or around the line of scrimmage and just be a quote-unquote big slot. He can be used all over the place and be effective. Also worth remembering, and this is courtesy of my buddy Alex Rollins, great YouTube channel, Alex Rollins Football on YouTube. He's got over 100,000 subscribers, big superstar. I'm glad he still takes the time to come on this show from time to time with all his fame and accolades and all that. I kid, Alex, you know I'm just messing with you. But he pointed out the fact that the last time Aaron Rodgers played a full season in the NFL, which of course was 2022 with the Packers, he threw 60% of his passes at or around the line of scrimmage and relied on his receivers to go and get yards. What is Brock Bowers really good at? Getting catches around the line of scrimmage, and he is an absolute beast in terms of yak. In fact, he had higher yak, as we talked about, than any of the top wide receivers in this draft class. So it's not that Bowers can't do the things that you're talking about. It's that Georgia utilized him in a different way, primarily in 2023, because that's what they needed from him. But when they did ask him to do these other things, he was really good at it. Now, the two things that people legitimately can point out with Bowers is, number one, he's not going to be able to take on some of the really big pass rushers one-on-one. that's okay. You just make sure that he's not in that position. You don't want to put him in that spot where he has to take on a guy like Myles Garrett one-on-one or somebody like that. But most tight ends can't do that, let's be honest. Yeah, somebody like Rob Gronkowski would be an exception, but the vast majority of tight ends are not going to be able to do that. And then the other thing that people have pointed out, including my friend Joe Blewett at Jets X Factor, is that Brock Bowers doesn't have a history of making contested catches. Now, it doesn't mean he can't do it. It just means that it was something that he didn't do much of at Georgia. So it's really more of an unknown than anything else. That said, everything else about Brock Bowers is pretty much a strength. Yeah, he's a little bit undersized for a tight end, but as far as his weight, he's right in the ballpark of most of the best tight ends. Yeah, he's not 265 pounds like Gronk, but 243 pounds is right there. And he's 6'3 instead of 6'5, but he's still a huge mismatch weapon. So I'm not really worried about the fact that he caught a lot of these passes at or around the line of scrimmage, because we've seen that he can do more than that. And we know that Rodgers really values that anyway.
Yeah, but that's all spot on, Scott. I mean, Bowers wasn't asked to block a ton, but when he blocked well. For some reason, I feel like with Bowers, we're at a point now where people are so anti that everything that applies to him that also applies to other people, we're only looking at with him. Like, all of a sudden, he has to be Orlando Pace as a blocker. He's got to be Megatron as a receiver. Otherwise, he's not worth it. When in reality, even the size is probably the number one, the only legitimate concern. He is the same height and 2 pounds less than Sam Laporta, who everybody was raving about last year. He's a better prospect, more productive, more physical. He should be a better player than Laporta was. He's 2 pounds less. They're both 6'3". I believe Laporta's 245, Brower's 243. He's going to be a good player in this league. He's not going to be Orlando Pace as a blocker, but he's going to be a good enough blocker that he's not going to be a liability the way a lot of tight ends are in today's game. I talked about that the other day, how he's most certainly better than a lot of the tight ends we see in the league now. But for some reason, again, people want to pick these sort of little bits of his game that aren't even weaknesses and just count them as a weakness because he's not the absolute best at it. But, you know, we talked about it before the show. I've said it to people. The fact that Georgia used him in a certain way doesn't mean he's not capable of playing another way. And the game I always point to, I mean, I probably watch more of Bowers than any other prospect because I loved him as a freshman. But just go watch what he does against Auburn. Watch the plays he makes after the catch, the plays up the seam. He makes maybe arguably my favorite Brock Bowers play, Scott, was actually wiped out by a penalty. He makes a one-handed catch between two defenders up the seam that it would have been a highlight reel play if not for a hold. So, no, it didn't count. But you see, if you watch the guy, what he's capable of, and he's certainly not a guy that I would worry about in any capacity, even the contested stuff. There's not a ton of it, but there is some of it out there where – you know, maybe he's created enough separation, so it's not a guy in his hip pocket. But if we have to dig this hard to find one thing that a guy might not be able to do, that's pretty impressive in my opinion.
Next question comes in from Michael Christopher. He asks, who are 5 Red Star prospects that you would put your stamp of approval on if the Jets drafted them, and the ones you would pound the table for? Also, not just talking about the first round, third round, and fourth rounders, just guys in general in this draft. I'm going to give you somebody at each position that I really, really like and would pound the table for. And this isn't necessarily the best guy at each position. This is just somebody that I think can come in and be a really, really good player. Doesn't mean I think the Jets will draft him. Doesn't mean I think the Jets should draft him. And I'm going to do a different guy at each position. I'm not going to double up and give you 2 or 3 wide receivers or anything like that. So Brock Bowers would be one of them, certainly. I also would make the same case for J.C. Latham. I think those two guys could come in and right away be really, really good. Of course, the argument for Bowers on the Jets over Latham is obvious. We already made that argument. Bowers could come in and make an impact immediately. Latham in the Jets situation would be a backup day one, and you'd be looking at a guy that would be hopefully the solution in 2025 and only play if there was an injury, and even then, who's to say how that plays out? I think you're better off with a veteran swing tackle, but we've already talked about that. Those are two guys that I would give you. I would also say Malachi Corley is a player that I really believe in. I think he can be an excellent player in the NFL. I've said this before, reminds me quite a bit of what Brandon Ayuk was like at Arizona State, and look at what Brandon Ayuk has turned into in the pros. I'm not saying Quarterly's necessarily going to be as good as Ayuk, but you can see the comparison there. I'll give you Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from NC State. I really like him. Incredible athlete. The injuries worry you a little bit, but I think if he stays healthy, he's the type of player that could be a 100-tackle guy every single year and be one of the centerpieces of a defense. He could be that type of player. Now, obviously a different type of player. I'm just saying that same type of mainstay that the Jets had for many years with David Harris at inside linebacker. Again, different player, different skill sets. I'm not trying to compare the two. I'm just saying David Harris was a really good inside linebacker for the Jets for a really long time, and I think Peyton Wilson could be that type of player as well. And then a fifth guy that I would pound the table for, and again, I'm not saying the Jets should draft him. He's just a guy that I think is really, really good. Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback from Toledo. I think he's the best corner in this class, and I think he has a chance to be a really, really good corner in the NFL, a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro potentially. I'm not saying he's necessarily going to be somebody like Sauce Gardner, but I could absolutely see him being on the level of the top cornerbacks in the league within a year or two. So those are five guys that I think are premier players that I would pound the table for. And again, it's not all just blue chip first rounders. Brock Bowers, J.C. Latham, Malachi Corley, Peyton Wilson, and Quinyon Mitchell.
Some really good names on there, Scott. Funny enough, as when you were done reading the question, I started writing the names down I was going to use. Decided I wouldn't use any, or figured what are the odds we pick one of the same guy. We're picking from the entire pool here. You literally said Peyton Wilson as I was writing Wilson. So I'll leave him off my list, but love Peyton Wilson. Had the chance to speak to him in Mobile, down-to-earth guy. The motor, the work ethic, it's all there. The physical stuff, the mental stuff, the injuries, of course, are a concern. But throwing out five names of guys I really like, and we're doing this on our show tonight. Tonight we're doing our guys, like pound, you know, sort of plant your flag, pound the table, whatever, for a guy you would take, not necessarily first round guys. Brock Bowers has to be my number one because I won't shut up about him. Xavier Leggett, wide receiver. He's a guy who was really the only weapon Spencer Rattler had in college. And I mean, catches contested balls, has great hands, great physicality. I mean, great athleticism for a guy his size. He can run really well. So I like Leggett. Another tight end here, even though we can, you know, Bowers is going to be more of a slot guy and this guy will be more of a tight end, but Ben Sennett from Kansas State tweeted about him a few days ago actually and said that any team that's looking at Bowers as someone they would really like to have, if they can't get him, probably the next closest thing is Sennett. K-State used him all over the place, H-back tight end, and just really quick out of his stance, you know, out of the blocks, off the snap, gets open in a hurry. Tough guy to bring down, really, you know, just a grinder who plays all over the field and does a real good job of catching the football. I actually saw him on, I think he was, after tweeting that out, I saw Rick Spielman, the former GM, had him as his number two tight end in the class, whereas a lot of people tend to have him 4, 5, 6. Next guy is Malik Mustafa, another guy I had a chance to speak to at the Senior Bowl. And just, he's so much fun to watch. He first jumped out at me a year or two ago. Not the biggest guy, but man, does he hits like a truck. And speaking of things, and look, I may be wrong, we'll know in time, but we just talked about how Brock Bowers was used a certain kind of way in college, and Malik Mustafa, I feel the same way. I feel like he has the skill set to cover better than people give him credit for. Just, I think Wake Forest liked playing him close to the line of scrimmage a little bit more than they should have, or I should say could have. I think he can cover the deep part of the field while also being a force against the run inside the box. And the last guy I want to mention is Tennessee running back Jalen Wright. I mean, I think he led the nation in carries for 10 plus yards. So explosive, so explosive. I mean, there are a couple of backs in this class, but Wright, to me, when I watch him, he's probably the biggest threat with the ball in his hands.
Glenn Naughton, editor, Jet Nation, thanks so much for coming on and answering some mailbag questions with me. Really appreciate it. Check out everything Glenn's doing over at Jet Nation. Check out everything we're doing at playlikeajet.com. And be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.